Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Social Ninjas Podcast, where your hosts, Kyle and Jeremy, have vulnerable conversations with the most successful entrepreneurs in the world to learn how they created and maintained an optimal mental health while building a thriving business. If you are an entrepreneur in the early stages of building your business who wants to learn techniques, tips, and tricks to improve your mental health to keep you and your business running smoothly, you're in the right spot. Quick disclaimer before starting the show. Kyle, Jeremy, and the guests they bring on the show are not health professionals, and what they say should not be used in place of or replacement of medication or your doctor. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to the Social Ninjas Podcast. I am your co-host, Kyle. Join with me, as always, is my other co-host, Jeremy. What is going on, Jeremy?
What's up, Kyle? I'm excited for today's episode, and it's not just because of my space shirt. You're watching this on YouTube.
One of a kind. And then we also have a special guest joining us today, Adam Brinson. What's up, Adam?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
I'm doing good. Doing well.
So for people who don't know you and don't know what you do, can you kind of explain a little background, kind of what you're doing? And
yeah. I imagine a lot of people don't know who I am because I'm not internet famous yet, but I kind of label myself as a fear of flying or flight anxiety coach. So it's kind of a niche. Oops, what happened?
You're there.
Yeah, you're still good.
Everybody froze. Oh, no.
What happened? We can still hear you.
Yeah, we can still hear you. I think The internet was like, flying? Oh, no!
It's corona season.
I'm out of here.
I froze, guys. I don't know what happened there, but hopefully I'm back.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, let's continue. So you help people who have anxiety fly. How did you get into that? And could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it all started years ago when I was on a flight, and I started having a really bad experience, started becoming really uncomfortable. And at the time, I had no problem flying. I actually liked it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was like this amazing thing. Had no problem with any part of it. I loved it. And then I was with a big group of people, and we were flying from the West Coast to the East Coast. And then we were about to land in Denver, Colorado. I just started feeling really, really strange. I didn't know what was going on with my body. And so trying to navigate all those weird feelings was like really scary because you don't know what's going on. You start thinking about like, what is this? Am I dying? Am I going crazy? Like, you know, what is it? And I was so sensitive to all the movements in the plane, and my own thoughts were just really uncomfortable, just feeling totally uncomfortable, you know? And I was with my girlfriend and her like whole entire family on the plane. She didn't know what to do, so she was just trying to support me the best she could, and I didn't know what was going on, so I was kind of like just trying to white knuckle and just like be quiet and deal with the sensations. I didn't know it was a panic attack. I had never had a panic attack. So that's basically when you have a panic attack in a plane, a lot of times after that then you develop a fear of flying because, you know, you want to avoid the anxiety, you want to avoid the uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah, the association.
That's where the fear started, and it's a big story. I can go into lots of detail about that, but then I just stopped flying. I was like, well, you know what? I'm just not going to get on a plane because I don't want to feel like that ever again. Because I had never had a panic attack, so I didn't really know how to navigate those feelings, and like I didn't know the correct way to respond to anxiety, so I just avoided it.
So how long did you go without flying?
Probably a couple of years at least before I forced myself on planes again.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you got over, you know, this anxiety from flying?
I mean, I just started on my own, just doing some research, reaching out to people. I didn't have insurance at the time and have health insurance, so I was using really low cost ways just to like get doctor's appointments when I could for, you know, for low cost, just to kind of figure out what was going on with me. And this is like 2013, so this is like several years ago. There wasn't as much talk about it on the internet and on YouTube like there is now. There wasn't a lot of videos. Like now I think it's really great how much sharing is going on. And so I didn't have that. So it was kind of a rough journey because I was just trying things out. I was really motivated because I was sick of how where my life had ended up, and I was really motivated to overcome it. So I kind of just did my best, you know, to try little techniques out. I didn't, you know, I had practiced meditation. I knew about mindfulness, things like that, but I was still struggling with the feelings. I was afraid of the anxiety. And then I just started trying things out. They were clicking, and then reading about stuff and researching things I was doing and having it confirmed by these like really great books I came across that like, oh, what I'm doing, I'm on the path to something and I think this is going to work. So the more I saw results, the more I trusted, my confidence kind of grew. And so I just kept up with it. And then fast forward to like the actual, I guess, solution was I flew by myself finally when I felt confident enough to do it. So I flew totally by myself on a trip without my wife or son for support, and just kind of used all my techniques and just applied everything I learned and taught myself and just had a great flight. It was so exciting, and I could feel how things had shifted at that point. And from then on, I just have had no problem flying. So it's been pretty awesome.
Well, so I guess I always assumed that people are, that a lot of people were, you know, kind of had that flight anxiety because they've, you know, they didn't know what to expect. And so your story of, so when you first got on, you weren't scared to fly, correct?
No, I was excited. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm originally from California. I used to fly down to California and visit people a lot. It's so easy. You can get on a plane and you're in California like in an hour and a half or 2 hours. And I used to do these trips a lot because they're way faster than driving and they're cheaper than, you know, driving, and it saves you a lot of time. So I used to do these trips a lot. So I was really experienced with flying. And then, so I didn't have any problems. But I think there's underlying things that I understood later that probably caused the anxiety in that certain situation. You know, there was contributing factors about like why maybe I was like at a point where it was going to tip over into a panic attack, but I wasn't aware of even how to monitor my body and kind of see where I was. I was just used to kind of powering through anxiety because I've dealt with anxiety my whole life and I didn't really have the best tools to deal with it, you know.
So what are some of your favorite tools to deal with it?
With anxiety, because I still deal with anxiety. The fear of flying is not so much a thing anymore. I look forward to flying. I think it's exciting, and I'm able to like see it that way. But I still deal with anxiety, and I would say the tools I learned with like cognitive behavioral training is really effective, of just noticing like, what am I thinking about? What are some really strong images that I'm getting? You know, what have I been doing the past week that could be elevating my anxiety and stress, and just keeping track of those things and noticing the patterns, and then kind of like responding to like irrational thinking with more rational thoughts. And also breathing exercise. I have a really probably number one breathing exercise that I do that helps people and helps myself like regulate the nervous system and kind of calm down the nervous system, so things don't get so overwhelming feeling. And so you can kind of like allow and accept the experience more. So I think allowing and accepting what's happening is kind of the key to managing and overcoming anxiety. It's like when you fight with it, that's where the problems kind of come up, I find, with myself and other people.
Yeah, that's a reoccurring theme we've heard in a lot of podcast guests. It's one of those things that's so much easier said than done.
It is, yeah.
It's like that.
If I told someone like, oh, you just allow it, they're like, how do I do that?
It reminds me of like you invite that one friend to that party who's just so toxic, and you're like, no, come on in. No, come on in. I know you're just like being negative and putting everyone down and just being really mean. No, yeah, show yourself around, introducing them to people.
Eat whatever you want. Drink whatever you want, yeah.
We love you so much. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah. It does feel like a toxic guest, right? But there's kind of more to it. It's like I look at anxiety now as kind of a teacher. It kind of showed me what I wasn't facing in my life and what I was avoiding. And now I think the healthiest relationship I have with it now is just being grateful that I had the opportunity to change my life because I recognized and dealt with my anxiety as best as I could. And so I've seen how, like, my life's totally different now because I dealt with it. You know, dealt with the things that were coming up in my life.
Behavioral, so the stuff you're talking about sounds similar to mindfulness. Is there similarities there?
Oh, I definitely learned a lot of mindfulness techniques. And they cross over with some other things I've read. Like, I really like this book by Claire Weeks. I think it's like Hope and Help for Your Nerves or something like that. And her process really reminds me of mindfulness, where you're just kind of noticing what's going on in the moment and just noticing your environment, you know, accepting your feelings, noticing your feelings, noticing where they're coming from. It's kind of like you're using curiosity and kind of objectivity in the situation rather than trying to like figure out what the problem is or what the challenge is. It's just kind of staying a little bit more objective. That's why I find it's more helpful for me, stepping back from the situation.
Yeah, I like that. That was the approach that I took when my when water was coming through my floor the other day. And I know you were you saw that story, Adam.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I remember just thinking, like, I'm just going to approach this with, like, curiosity. Like, I wonder why the water's leaking. Like, I wonder what's going to hold this. What's my day going to be in store? You know, or what's going to be in store with the rest of my day? Like, I wonder how this is going to go. Just approaching it that way instead of just being like, oh, my God, the water going into my kitchen right now. And I'm home with all three kids because my wife's at work. Like, what the heck? How am I supposed to get stuff done?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, there's so many justifications of like, well, yeah, of course you got upset. I would, you know, like, a lot of people could identify with getting really frustrated in the moment. And I'm not saying people shouldn't get frustrated ever again, but still, like, in the moment, you have the choice to respond to your feelings. Like, we always have a choice right in the moment. And so the more we practice choosing how we're going to respond, I think we just get better at it and kind of catch ourselves quicker. So we're not like at a 9 or a 10, we're like at a 5 or a 6, and then we're choosing to look at the situation and realize like, okay, this isn't the worst thing that could be happening. I'll figure this out. It's not what I want to be happening. It's not my preferred situation right now, but that's just, life has a lot of those situations where I don't get to choose what happens, but I get to choose my response, you know?
So can you take us a little, I was wondering if you can take us a little bit into, like, when you take people up who have anxiety for flying, what usually comes up for them and what types of tools and stuff do you do to help to support them?
So right now, I've mainly been working with people one-to-one over Zoom coaching calls, Zoom video, and then I have a Facebook group and my Instagram page. I get a lot of conversations going in my messages, my direct messages with people, and I'm kind of just like finding out where they are, and I'm approaching each person's situation kind of like on a case-by-case basis, because people have a lot of different factors that cause their anxiety and fear around flying. Like, one person may really dislike turbulence, another person doesn't even care about it. So it kind of depends. Sometimes it just takes like informing people about how flying works so that all those doubts that come up in their mind before a flight or during a flight can be kind of like dealt with using like rationality and logic and facts rather than going towards their fear and their like images or maybe something they saw on the news. So it kind of just depends on the people, but I definitely recommend people tracking their thoughts, using some cognitive behavioral kind of documentation, like logging their thoughts and feelings throughout the day. I give them writing prompts to write about certain topics depending on their situation. I have them watch videos and have them tell me what they think about the videos and ask them questions about it. So it's kind of like a pretty interactive thing I do, and I kind of tailor it to each person. So a lot of it's anxiety management techniques through CBT, breathing techniques, and developing a breathing like exercise kind of practice, daily routine, and a general baseline knowledge about flying and safety. I think those are the three main areas, because I'm trying to develop trust in people and themselves to manage and handle the situation. And then I want them to trust the information they have in their mind. I want them to trust the industry and the airlines and the planes. So it's like building trust through like a multi-tiered kind of like plan.
I love that.
So I wonder, and I'll be honest, I'm drawing a blank as I speak. So I might just ramble until I figure out what I was about to say.
We'll get there.
Sorry. I have a question. I love the trust within, the helping them find trust within themselves.
Right. Yeah.
So what is what do you think has people not trust themselves, and how does that shift really change things for them?
I think I focus on it because that's what I discovered for myself, because a lot of what I show is like, hey, this is what worked for me, and this is what I found helps other people. And for me, like, my graduation from fear was when I was able to fly by myself, because I understood, like, I need to be my ultimate source of support. I can't look externally to my wife or my son or other people. Like, I need to be able to go into the situation and not expect it to be perfect, but trust myself to be able to navigate whatever happens. And that's when I'm, like, that's when I'm winning, right? When I'm able to go, you know what, no matter what happens, I'm going to be okay with it, because I trust myself to have things available that I can say to myself. I have the tools that I practice. And over time, your confidence goes up because you keep trying things out and saying, like, you know, this actually works. I'm feeling a lot better. Because I want people to, like, also note what they're doing and, like, getting and writing down and kind of documenting, like how they're feeling throughout the day. And if they fly a lot, I want them documenting how they're feeling before and after the flight so they can see that progress that's happening. And I think that's when you build up trust in yourself as well. You're like, hey, look, because there's not a scale for it, but you can kind of, like, do a self kind of assessment and kind of gauge, you know, like, oh, where was I, was at like a 7 and now I'm at like a 5. Like, look at, things are getting better. That makes me feel better about what I'm doing. I trust myself, and I think I'm gonna get to a better point, to where I'm gonna be at a 2 or 1 or 0 at some point.
Yeah, I love that. This is, instead of being worried about what might go wrong, just accepting that might go wrong, and even if it does go wrong, like, embracing it in a level of, if something goes wrong, that's a great learning experience. So hopefully something goes wrong almost. So it's just like that shift in expectations.
Yeah, it's like, it's reframing of like opportunity. Like, to me, failure and fear and anxiety are opportunities to show up as your best self, to show up courageously. So if someone hasn't flown for a while and they're like, well, it's been a year and I'm really nervous about what might happen. I last flight I did really well. This one, something could go wrong. Or I remember I didn't like take off, and what if something happens? I'm like, you know what? Like, this is your opportunity, though, to show yourself that all the things you've done will be there for you. All the tools are there for you. You've had that success in the past. And this is your opportunity to prove your thoughts wrong. It's like, go into this saying, like, you know, no matter what happens, I'm going to prove my thoughts and the negative chatter wrong by just being a badass.
And even seeing it as an opportunity. I remember the hardest thing for me in my journey was whenever I get triggered, I'd be, gosh, I was just a good mood. I was doing so well for so many days in a row. Right. And I'm so triggered, blah, 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 blah. And I just, like, get all frustrated with myself. And the hardest thing for me was like, oh, I'm triggered. This is a fantastic opportunity to process stuff that has been hiding in my subconscious. Yes, I'm so happy I'm triggered. Let's do some. And I go to a men's meeting, you know, MKP, and I'll just do like a bunch of work. And of course, that trigger was just tied to like all sorts of stuff from like my childhood and this and that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is a great, I'm glad it's coming out. This is a good opportunity for me to do some work.
Right.
That was hard for me, but it was a huge lesson.
Because that's the path. Like, everyone, if someone wants to know, what's the path to where, like, my future self is going to be confident, capable, and strong, and powerful, and, you know, all these great things we imagine we could be in our lives. It's like, well, the path to that point is by going through all this fear, going through all this stuff confidently and courageously, because that's how you get there. There's no shortcut. There's no I can't whisper a magic phrase to anybody where things are going to switch. It's like, you have to do this work and show yourself that it's not a big deal to put yourself in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, and I like that.
It goes unexpected. It's like, so what? It went unexpectedly. So what?
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to process too. I remember just dealing with my own social anxiety. It was like, you know, I wanted to overcome it. I wanted to, you know, get to the point where my anxiety wasn't controlling my life and dictating how I was feeling and, you know, what decisions I was making, but it was almost like in the back of my mind, like it was just going to go away or I would just grow out of it or something. And it took me a long time to like face the fact like, okay, I have to do something that's really outside my comfort zone, something I do not want to do to be able to get to the spot I want to do. And I kind of wonder, how do you create that mindset shift in people?
Well, I really relate to what you're saying right now, because I also dealt with a lot of social anxiety, and I made myself do uncomfortable things. For example, I used to work a lot in the service industry and in restaurants, and I made myself go from the back of the house to the front of the house and wait tables. So I would force myself to be talking to people and see that it wasn't a big deal, because if it's strangers, it was a lot easier to navigate that. So I just wanted to like say, hey, I totally identify with that process of like when you have social anxiety, that you want to grow out. You think like, oh, I'm going to like mature or something, like something's going to happen, and then I'm just going to like know how to be differently. And it's like, no, you got to be uncomfortable and like not care what people think. And the way I help people with flying, with overcoming their fear, is you have to paint a picture of like really strongly like where their life is now and all the things they're not able to do or they won't be able to do if they don't face this. And it can be really uncomfortable to acknowledge like, hey, have you visited your family lately? Like, when's the last time you saw your parents or your siblings? You know, some people I talk to haven't seen their parents for 3 years or more, or their family's living in another country and they've never met them because they're too afraid to get on a plane. And so it's just realizing like, hey, this is your life, you know, like what are you going to do with it? And are you going to show up for yourself and these other people? And just think what you're missing out on, especially when you talk about like being in a relationship and having kids, you have to think about other people than yourself sometimes and use that as a motivation of like, you know, this is about showing up for my kids, providing an example for them, being a good partner, and kind of like living a life that's in alignment with your values. So for me, like, I like to have people get really clear about their values and their why. Like, why is this important to you? Because I want to work with people who like want to do this. And so the clearer we can get about why are you doing this? Why are you going to go through this thing that's going to be, you know, tough? I want them to get really clear on it. So at any point when there's doubts, they can refer back to that reason. Like, why are we doing this? And let's not forget.
I love that. I love how you're helping them create their why. I think it's something, in my judgment, a lot of people don't just stop to figure out. I think, especially right now, everyone's taking kind of a pause and going inward is something that a lot of people I've seen are doing, and kind of realizing that they're kind of on autopilot, speaking of pilot on their lives, and realizing, hold on, the destination I'm headed towards is not really what I want to, but it's what I know.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Kyle, your favorite co-host of the Social Ninjas podcast. Don't worry, I won't tell Jeremy. I just want to share with you all this really awesome mental health app designed specifically for men. So we all know that mental well-being takes practice, it takes strength, and it takes vulnerability, which for us men is sometimes kind of hard. It's not something that we fix, it's something that we honor, and no man needs to do that alone. That's where the Tether app comes into play. It's an area to practice those skills. With the app, you get access to peer programming, content, and a 24/7 support network where you can support other men and be supported yourself. It's not just a place to come when you're having a bad day. It's for every single day, and we celebrate a lot in the app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play Store for free. All you got to do is go check it out, go download it. It is the Tether app, and that's T-E-T-H-R. Go download it right now, then come back to the podcast and listen.
Yeah, what does it say? Be careful. I'll screw the quote up. Never mind. I had a quote in mind.
Screw it up. Let's do it. Embrace that.
I've already screwed up once. Your turn.
It's your turn to screw something up, Adam. Let's
Well, there's one quote. It's like, what got you here will get you there. Like, whatever got you here isn't going to get you there. And the other quote's kind of like, you know, like about doing the same thing, expecting you're going to end up at a different destination.
Different results is insanity. Yeah.
Whatever is getting you here or making you feel stuck is going to make you continue to feel stuck. It's not going to suddenly become the new strategy that's going to change your life. Like, if you keep doing the same thing, that strategy doesn't all of a sudden become this new path towards this better life that you dream for yourself, or the way you overcome your anxiety. It's going to keep you wherever you are. So if you want to be stuck, keep doing what you're doing. And that's, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people end up being stuck. And that's why I put myself out there as someone like, hey, here I am. Are you stuck on things? That's a great thing about social media is people can go online on their phone and find somebody that is a light, some sort of a guiding light for them. And they may not have that. They may not have any good inputs in their life that's showing them what's possible.
Wow.
So I wonder, with your clients that you help with this, what's the biggest misconception that you hear from them about flying?
Let's see. I would think probably they have misconceptions around turbulence a lot. There's all these different ideas about like how safe turbulence is, like where it comes from. People think there's like air pockets and somehow the plane's going to like drop out of the sky. But air pockets don't exist. That's like saying there's like a water pocket in the ocean or something where there's no water or something. It's like, no, it's like the air is all air. There's all air everywhere at all times. But people hear these things. They read an article or something, and then they get this idea of like, oh, I've heard about air pockets. That must be a thing. And like, what if my plane has an air pocket and we drop, you know, or something happens? So it's just these misconceptions of like what turbulence can do to a plane or what the air can do to the plane is kind of what things they help people overcome with their fear of flying. Because a lot of times if they just realize like, you're not going to go anywhere. The plane's actually stuck in the air pretty much due to the forces that are being exerted on it. And because of physics, just how physics works and how lift works, like the plane's not going anywhere. So you're not dropping out of the sky. Turbulence isn't going to hurt the plane. And in fact, the amount of turbulence it would take to disrupt the plane path to create enough danger to crash is like so high that you would never be able to physically experience it. That's how well the planes are designed.
Oh. I'm not going to lie. I've had it where I'm going through some turbulence. And my first reaction is, oh, hold on. Is this normal? Even I have that.
Yeah.
It's a scary feeling. Yeah. I'm not going to, it definitely triggers a stress response. So that's what I help people with too, is understanding like these feelings we get that are like dropping sensations. It's natural for our body to respond to them as if we're in danger. Cause if we didn't, we wouldn't be alive as humans. Like we have to have these natural automatic responses that like keep us like on guard. So if you feel like you're falling, that is completely normal to think like something's wrong, but you have to be able to reframe it over time and get you information about, you know, flying or your environment so that you're knowing what's going on. It's like that you're dropping. Yes, it feels like you're dropping a lot, but that's the way your mind's perceiving the situation. And in fact, you're not dropping enough to cause any, you know, danger to the plane or yourself. And
that's funny. I remember, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, me and my wife got on a plane. It's the first time she's ever been on a plane. She was super anxious about it. I've been on planes multiple times, but I've never experienced any turbulence on planes. So we get on this plane on our first flight, and of course we experience turbulence during it. It's like me inside, I'm kind of freaking out myself. I'm like, oh man, like what is going on? Because I've never experienced that before. And like her first flight was like that. But I remember I was just like trying, because I had to convince her to actually like, okay, let's do this plane instead of driving. And so I remember like kind of being there like trying to have my shit together, basically like, no, this is good. This is normal, babe. Like, yeah. And like just me by doing that, like it made her feel a lot more calm. So yeah, I don't know. That just reminded me of that story.
That's great. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what you're kind of doing to yourself. If you have a fear of flying, you got to talk to yourself through the process. Like, and that's why it's important to be able to manage and navigate like elevated feelings, because if you get too anxious, then you can't even access your rational mind, and it's really hard to talk yourself through it. But like, you can create that inner voice that's going to help guide you through the process. Cause like, we need that sense of like strength that's going to go, hey, you know what? Yeah, you feel like you're freaking out, but remember what we've learned, remember the facts, and this is going to be totally fine. Look around you, look at everybody else, look how they're responding. And The pilots don't care about it at all, I can tell you that. They're not worried about the turbulence.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
We both say go ahead at the same time. You want me again?
Go ahead.
So, when you're helping people overcome their fear of flying, so is, I guess I'm trying to think of how to word this exactly, but do you have them do like a multiple flies and just like flying just to fly, or maybe they're flying to, you know, go see their parents, like you said, or earlier in another country, or like, how does this usually go? If you understand what I'm saying.
I encourage people to do whatever they're comfortable doing. I definitely want them to not miss out on things that they would regret. Because I, like on Instagram, a lot of people will find me because they're kind of in a desperate situation. They're like looking for, they're Googling stuff and they go on Instagram, they type in fear of flying or flight anxiety. And then like I pop up because I'm like the only person on there really talking about this. So they find me and they message me and I'll find out like, oh, your flight's in 2 days. Okay. And then we'll set up a call or something like a coaching call and I'll try to talk to them through with the situation and see where they're at and see if they want to do it. Because I don't want anybody forcing themselves to do things they're not comfortable with completely. Like, because I don't want to like traumatize anyone. But a lot of times I can tell when people just need some encouragement. And even though this isn't going to be like their perfect best flight because of how close it is to us talking, I can get them to a point where they do feel a lot better. Sometimes just talking to me as someone who understands helps them realize like, you know what, I got to do this because I'm about to go see my parents. Or I'm going to go see my sister. And it's her wedding. You know, I have to do this. I want to do it. And hopefully this will be the point, you know, they think where it's going to change. And a lot of times after talking to me, even when it's close to their flight, after that flight, they do feel better. Just from one conversation, and it shows them that, like, something else is possible because they're used to not really having any signs that it's going to get any better. So after that, once they feel encouraged to fly, I'm like, you know, fly as much as you can because, you know, keep practicing this stuff because it's the more you can practice it, the better you get at it. And then you kind of retrain your habits, you retrain your nervous system to respond differently to the stimulation and the sounds and the feelings.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I was just curious if there was people like just buying, you know, flight to Cali and back just to kind of practice and work on their flight anxiety and stuff.
Some people do, yeah. The people I talk to overseas, like in European countries, because the trips are so short sometimes, they will book really short flights to practice because they can book trips that are like 30 minutes to an hour, and that kind of helps them because sometimes you're in a smaller plane, it's not so intimidating, you kind of just go up and go down. And you might not even go up as high as you would, like in a transcontinental craft. So it's a good practice flight, and the people that want to do that, I definitely encourage it, just because you got to go through it. You got to go through the experience. So when you're on the ground, you're not really going through it. Right. You got to do it. You got to do the thing.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I first started my journey of getting over my social anxiety, and I would force myself to go out and talk to people. And it was my you talk about framing. At first it was grueling and my brain's like, this is awful, this is terrible. But then yeah. I reframed it. I'm like, this is great practice, like going to the gym. You know, sometimes you're lifting those weights and you're like, oh, this is so grueling. But then all of a sudden, boom, you buff. Same with social anxiety, with all these aspects like that. Just framing that grueling, like putting in work feeling as a positive thing.
Oh, definitely. Like I mentioned, one of the things that helped me overcome my social anxiety was when I decided to start waiting tables because you're talking to so many people and because you don't have time to think about it because you're like, well, there's your table. This is your job. You're at work. Like you kind of have to do it. You got this like motivation for your job. And it kind of turns off the part of your mind that's going to like stop you. So I liked that constant repetition of just being exposed to it over and over again. And then, you know, I remember like when I first had like a really big party, a big table, and it's like, wow, this feels totally different. I'm going to talk to 20 people and take their order, remember everything and talk to all of them and, you know, make sure everything's fine. Like that was really intimidating for me. I remember that. And the more I did it, I was able to reframe this. Like, you know what? The more I do this, this is going to be somewhat easy, like in a couple of months. It's not going to be easy right away, but like eventually it's going to be easy. It's not going to be a big deal. And if I am uncomfortable, so what? It'll be okay. It'll be fine. And most of the time, the things you notice about yourself that you're worried about other people noticing, they're not even noticing. They're not paying attention to you as much as you are paying attention to yourself. And that helps me. That always helped me too. Realizing like people don't care as much about how I'm reacting or what I'm saying as my brain does. My brain's like worried about how I'm going to come across. And it's not a really big deal. We all have our idiosyncrasies and the things we're challenged with. And the more we accept ourselves, we can accept other people, I think, too.
1,000%.
Yeah.
And I can relate. So I did pizza delivery in college, and that was something that was helpful to me. I understand that kind of like forcing yourself to talk to people. And there's like an extra incentive, too. It's like, most of the time when you can actually talk to people and kind of have some sort of conversation, even if they were short, you know, because I'm just delivering pizzas, mm-hmm. they're going to increase a little bit too. So make a little bit more money.
Exactly. Yeah. Motivation.
Yeah.
That'd be such an interesting way to deal with your anxiety too, because it's like you're just opening the door, or they are opening the door, and it's like, who is this person? You have no idea.
Oh, yeah. 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 It was interesting. Goodbye. Yeah. Yeah, that was when I really used a lot of curiosity. It's just like, okay, like I wonder, you know, what door I'm going to open today. So
yeah,
I definitely ran into a lot of unusual, I don't want to say unusual people, but unusual circumstances and things.
Right. At what point did you like really feel like you made a lot of progress with that then when you were doing that? Did you all of a sudden you're just like, oh, did you talk yourself differently or something? Or like, what was it that made you feel a lot different?
Yeah, I think, I mean, talking to myself was a big thing. I think what you said just a minute ago of nobody cares as much about that thing I'm thinking about as I do. It's like one thing I did when I was delivering pizzas is I started wearing funky long socks every day. Like different colors, and I still wear them. I've got socks on today. I got socks with flamingos on today.
Yeah, so, dude.
Yeah, I started wearing stuff like that because I always thought like people would be like judge me based on what I was wearing. Like, oh, what? Nobody freaking cares at all. After a few days of doing it, like nobody cared at all. In fact, it was like the opposite. Like people like loved my socks, and it was so much easier to start conversation because it was such an icebreaker with things they've never seen before. And so, yeah, it was right. Really beneficial. I didn't expect that, but it worked really well.
Yeah, it's like the more we're putting ourselves out there, then the more people can see who we are. And then that actually draws them to us. They're like, oh, this guy's cool. It's like, I like how different you are than other people. Like, I like that you're putting your personality out there, because that's who we're actually drawn to. We're drawn to the characters, unique people in life. I think that's like the people we most look up to, or the people that stand out. So if we are okay with standing out and being different, we're being true to ourselves, and I think it's making the world a better place.
Oh boy.
Here we go.
I agree.
For those just listening, Jeremy just put on the, what is that, a wolf hat?
Yeah.
I like that that was in your arm's reach. You just, you know, look, here it is, right here.
I'm sure he's got other things in arm's reach, too. Don't tempt him.
Oh.
What are you guys doing?
Game with props today. I love it.
What are you guys doing, huh?
It reminds me. So I had this wolf hat, and I was going to go to the market, like the grocery store with it, right? I know a lot of people there. And I had all this anxiety for doing it, thinking people were going to look at me all weird and judge me. And I noticed, like, it was the opposite. People are having challenging days, and it cheered them up. And they're just excited about it. It treated me actually better, in my opinion, wow, than when I wasn't wearing the hat. Like, isn't that a crazy juxtaposition?
So they actually came up to you and, like, told you,
I love your hat. Oh, it's really, I've been having a hard day. It's really cheered me up. This is amazing. Like,
oh, man, that's so great. That's like the best thing you could hear.
No, my brain's like, don't do it. You're gonna. Everyone's gonna look at you. You're gonna stand out. This and that. Same with like, I had a T-shirt that says "I love me." I was like nervous to wear it for some reason, but I got like everyone's like, "I love your shirt." Oh, like actually, like the people that came up to me were actually my tribe, like the people I like in my life. You know, those positive people.
Right. Yeah, it's like when we're vulnerable, that's when we find the people we want to connect with. I think most.
Cool.
Yeah, it's all about making that first step. That first step's the hardest. And once you take that first step, you know, that first challenge, it gets easier and easier every time. I won't say it's easy the second step, but it gets easier and easier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's retraining your mind and your reactions you have toward yourself. Yeah. It's like, I don't know if you guys know Mel Robbins. She talks about like the 5-4-3-2-1. Like when you feel kind of frozen and not taking action, I think this can apply to everything. It's just like, give yourself a little countdown of like, okay, after I count down, I'm going to do it. And then just go 5-4-3-2-1. And then you act. Because then you don't have time to think. Because if you decide to wait until you feel ready, that could take forever. That could just, you could always put it off. But if you just say, I'm going to do this once I count down, that's putting a different type of pressure that you sometimes you can't argue with, because you just decide like, oh, we got to one, it's time to act, you know, rather than like, oh, how do I feel? Like, that's just not a good way to decide when you're going to take action, because how we feel doesn't just determine how well something's going to go or what we're going to learn from the situation.
Oof, I love that quote. I love that. Yeah, it reminds me of today's run. My brain is trying to talk me out of it.
Yeah. Why are you running?
Why are you doing that? Oh, why are you doing that? You're not going to feel better. What's the point?
Yeah, I know you, me and man. It's like, I know logically that like, if I exercise 5 days a week, I'm going to feel better. But it doesn't mean I want to do it.
Yeah,
even though it's like I got it down to like where I do like 20 to 30 minute workouts, because I can kind of accept that, and still it's like, it's just that first, it's like, just put like, turn the video on, because I follow these video workouts because I need someone to like tell me what to do. Do this, stop, do that, you know, like here's the next exercise. So if I have someone I'm following, it's like, even though they're on a video, it's like I feel like accountable to that person on video for some reason.
Yeah. What works.
Yeah. And so I just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna put my shoes on. I'm just gonna put my shoes on, change my shoes, and then I'm gonna like put my workout shorts on. Just do these like one little thing at a time and see how I feel. And then by the time I'm dressed, then it's like, okay, well now I got the whole thing on, I'm ready to exercise. Let's just warm up. And then from warming up, it's like, okay, now I'm warmed up. Let's do this. Now I start to feel more motivated. So I have to like kind of walk myself through like a process sometimes. And then when I do it, I'm like, you know what? That was hard, but like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I did that. I can just feel my body like cleansed of some of the tension that I was holding.
Yeah, I've never gone on a run and regretted it. Like, why did I do that? I've never, not once.
Yeah. I know, that's the thing.
Yeah, I always feel better. Every time.
Yeah.
Okay, should I ask the question?
Whoa.
The question. Okay, so if you had the ability to spread a message to everybody in the world, what would it be? What would your message be?
A message to spread across the world. I love that. I wish I had that opportunity. I guess it would be, don't be afraid to love yourself and love other people more. Just don't be afraid to do that.
Nice.
I swear you read my Instagram.
I just made that up now, I swear. I don't have a card of like, what if Kyle asks me this number one question? I just think weird. Like, and that goes to interpretation. I mean, to me, I just think like loving yourself is, you know, accepting yourself, being vulnerable, doing things that are uncomfortable, but then also putting that out into the world where you're like showing people that like you're going to accept and love them just no matter what you perceive or how you feel in the moment, because I think it's easy to judge people externally without thinking like, well, you know, what if I look at this as like, I love this person because I might get to know them to the point where I do love them. Why not start from the position of love at the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just being real with it. I remember when I used to have bad days or challenging times, I'd be in denial about it. I remember the first time I was like, I just had a challenging day. That's okay. Just saying it out loud, that one time out loud, just made it so much less intense.
I know, just saying things out loud sometimes is amazing how much pressure relieves. Like, you're like not keeping it in your head. That's why journaling, I think, is so nice. It's like you're doing something with your hand. It's physical. And you have like a document to reread later. I've been so surprised sometimes, like what I have written in journals, and then I read it and I'm like so surprised by the wisdom I had in those moments when I was challenged. And that, like, so I'll learn from myself just by reading all the entries, the things I decided to, like, that popped into my head at the moment. I'll be like, wow, that's like so helpful to read that from my past self right now, because I decided to express it. You know, what if I held that in at that moment? I wouldn't have that opportunity to learn from myself.
Yeah, that's a good take. Yeah, I've recently been doing a little bit of journaling. I've been trying to do it on a daily basis. But yeah, it's interesting how you can, you know, sometimes you have that thought of like, I don't need to journal. I can just think it. But just putting it on paper and just like seeing it in words, it's almost like when you start putting in it words, like that thought grows to so much more, and you see so much more of kind of what's inside.
Yeah.
It is very releasing.
And a lot of great ideas come from bad ideas. So are they bad ideas?
Exactly.
What's the bad idea? Hold on, we got to first show the first ever Social Ninjas t-shirt.
Oh, this is the debut. I love it.
Get him on there. Kyle and I just hired a graphic designer to design our Social Ninjas t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't look like that. Oh. Thankfully.
But actually read the whole thing.
Yeah. Before we go any further, where can people find you at, Adam?
I would love it if people look for me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active, and that's the easiest way to find me. Because if you just type in like fear of flying or Adam Brinson or flight anxiety, you'll see my face. And then I got all my posts there. You can like see what I've shared with the world, and you can message me. And I'll usually respond pretty quickly. And then I have a Facebook group for people who are trying to overcome the fear of flying too. But that's a closed group. And it's just like people come through invite only, or they find me and then I kind of tell them about the opportunity. But the easiest way is Instagram. Just Life Takes Flight. That's my like handle, Life Takes Flight.
Good name.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Adam. It's great connecting with you.
Thank you, guys. So great to be here. Love talking to you.